Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart.
Having a child who is sick is a full-time occupation. Sure, we still enjoy the usual day-to-day happinesses of family life, big house, great kids, but beneath the exterior, there are cracks, resentments, that threaten the very foundation of our lives. But somehow, the very things that tore us apart would bring us together in ways we could have never imagined.
Matt Patterson is an award-winning writer, editor, communications professional, and inspirational speaker. He's here today to talk about his book, My Emily, a moving story of his journey with a special needs daughter who changed his life. Emily eventually went home to be with the Lord, but she continues to touch hearts and lives through this powerful story. Matt, welcome to Heartline.
Well, thank you very much, Rita. It's nice to be with you.
Your daughter Emily was born with Down syndrome. Were you and your wife aware that we were going to have a special needs child?
Absolutely not. Actually, it was quite a surprise to us. I guess the best way to say it is to say we were blindsided. We, at the time, were both only 25 years old, and that's something that normally doesn't happen, especially if there's no real family history or anything of that sort. It completely blindsided us, and we really didn't find out until actually the very next morning. We had made phone calls and handed out bubblegum cigars, and we didn't find out until the next morning that they suspected, and we're pretty sure that she was born with Down syndrome.
What was going through your mind when you heard the news, Matt?
I had no clue what Down syndrome was.
Really?
I had no clue. 25 years
old.
Yeah,
25. You probably didn't.
I mean, basically, probably the top things ever on my mind was what channel was ESPN on, and, you know, went to work every day, and we were just excited, you know, that we were having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't know what Down syndrome was, and actually, once we kind of found out what it was, I was trying to prove that she didn't have Down syndrome, at least while we were waiting some blood results to confirm it. I was trying everything in my power to say that the doctors and medical science was wrong.
Mm-hmm. How did your wife feel? How did she deal with it?
It was very difficult. She was crushed.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody that's having a child, especially your first child, you know, everybody asks, what do you want, a boy or a girl? And to be honest, most people say, you know, it doesn't matter as long as it's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite the blow to her, at least initially, the initial news, because, like I said, it really wasn't something that was considered to have, you know, a child with Down syndrome. And when the doctor came in that morning to tell us, we're in a room by ourselves. He closes the door and pulls the curtain, even though we're just the three of us in that room.
So you knew something wasn't right.
Oh, something was not good.
Now, were you and your wife able to connect together with this loss at that time?
It was difficult. I would have to say, at the time, it was kind of quiet. We had family. Both sets of in-laws came down at separate times to help us once we brought Emily home. So it was nice to have, you know, our parents there for us. But for the connection between us, I would think initially the first couple of days it was very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost, I want to say, like a grieving process.
Sure.
we were sad. We were sad, but I would think once we got home within the first week or two, we began to look at, well, you know what? She has Down syndrome. Okay. But you know what? She's still healthy. She was just like any other baby. She just has a chromosome defect. So it wasn't like it was the end of the world. Things actually began to pick up like normal. We had a beautiful and wonderful baby.
Having a special needs child is obviously very demanding. What types of challenges did you guys encounter, and how did you deal with them?
You know, there weren't all that many types of challenges. And
so she was kind of like a normal baby. You didn't
really
face
it. She was just like a normal baby. I did diaper patrol just like any other dad would. It was not all that challenging. I would think some of the biggest challenges were dealing with other people where they may have found out through the grapevine that we had a Down child. So I think there was a great deal of sympathy and genuine sincerity, but sometimes, you know, the looks you would get from people when they would see her slanted eyes or chubby mm-hmm. cheeks, and we're all not equipped to deal with that in a certain way. As a kid growing up, I, for some particular reason, and I mentioned in the book that I surrounded myself with friends that often, you know, are immature and would poke fun at special needs children.
Mm.
I just never got into it. As being 8, 10 years old, maybe even 12 years old, they would poke fun or make comments, and I just never got into that. I just never did. It made me very, very uncomfortable. And then some years later, say anywhere between 15 to 20 years later, here I am with a special needs child. So there were looks, you know. There's genuine people who just don't know how to react.
Right. So what did you do?
When slanted eyes and chubby cheeks.
Yeah. How did you guys deal with that?
I probably didn't do as well as my wife.
Mm-hmm.
It just became a part of understanding that, you know, some people just aren't going to react the same.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we still had a beautiful and very loving and wonderful little girl, and we were very proud of her.
When was she diagnosed with leukemia?
She was diagnosed on my birthday.
Oh, my gosh.
She was 2 years and 3 months.
What was that like for you?
So we took her into the ER. You know, she was running a fever, and we thought, well, let's get the Tylenol, Dimetapp, and amoxicillin, and we'll go about our merry way, and we'll be able to sleep in on my birthday. And we never left the ER that night. As we were getting ready to leave, we asked what some pinpoint dots were on her arm and her legs, and they wound up drawing some blood. And when they came back, they said, well, the numbers are so off the charts that we actually want to draw the blood again. And when they came back, we then learned that the dots were petechiae and little pinpoint bruises, and are kind of a telltale sign that there's possibly leukemia. And then we were brought into an exam room in the ER, and then we were told that she had leukemia, and that plans were immediately put into motion to transport us to an Air Force Medical Center in Mississippi. At the time, we were in Alabama, and at that point, they were getting a plane ready to take us to Mississippi so we could begin treatment immediately.
Can you describe how you and your wife felt when you heard the news?
Crushed.
Yeah.
I think any parent who hears the word cancer or leukemia and their child's name is mentioned in the same sentence, very, very difficult. And it's been 22 years since, and I have to say that it's not easy to this day talking about it.
Were you angry at God at that point, Matt, do you think?
At that point, no. I would have to say, I can almost see myself looking skyward like, okay, Down syndrome?
Yeah, now this?
Now leukemia? hello. Do you want to spread the love somewhere else?
Yeah.
I would say there was more frustration than anger,
mm-hmm.
To be honest.
How about your wife?
Crushed.
So she wasn't angry at God?
No, I would say not. I think after the initial shock, I mean, I jumped on a plane with Emily, a medevac plane, and to be honest, she did not look good. And she was hooked up to a bunch of lines and bags full of medication. And I actually thought she would pass away at some point before we even got to Mississippi. Even at some point, I actually thought she may pass away right before we took off.
Oh, my gosh, Matt. That had to be just gut-wrenching.
It certainly was. We were in a scramble mode. Once we heard that a plane was going to be leaving in 30 minutes, I jumped in the car. Bonnie stayed with Emily, and I ran home real quick and did a mad dash to the house, you know, going for a diaper bag, more diapers, onesies, pajamas, clothes, just things that you normally carry in a diaper bag on a trip, say, on a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And as I pulled up behind the ER and the ambulance. Emily was already in the ambulance. Doors were open waiting for me. I put the car in park, jumped out of the car and jumped in the back of the ambulance. They drove us off to the flight line. They loaded us on the plane, and we took off and flew to Mississippi, where Bonnie kind of got things together at the house and drove the next morning to Mississippi.
Wow.
From our home in Alabama, so we at least had a car there. And I have to say, even to this day, I remember staring at the floor in the aircraft and looking over at Emily and asking myself, am I gonna watch my daughter die?
What did you face when you got to the hospital?
We got to the hospital, and everybody just was moving so quickly. They were waiting on us, and began a blood transfusion and platelets, and everybody was moving so quickly. The next morning, our oncologist came in and told us what type of leukemia she had, and that we were immediately starting a 100-day regimen of chemotherapy. They said that her type of leukemia, which was ALL or acute lymphoblastic leukemia, was very treatable. There was more than a puncher's chance of getting into remission, and that we should be able to do very well. But if she didn't respond to the treatment, then we were in big trouble.
Is this common with children with Down syndrome?
Very much so.
There is a high
incidence of leukemia tied in with Down syndrome. Yes, it is. We went there. We went through the grind of 100 days, and shortly after the first few days of treatment, Emily began to lose her hair. And I explain in the book one of the more touching moments was watching my wife braid Emily's hair.
Hmm.
And cut locks for everyone to have.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know if she was ever going to get her hair back, or it would be quite some time before she would get it back.
Did she stay in the hospital throughout this whole 100 days?
For the 100 days, yes, she was. Because very susceptible with the chemotherapy, you're trying to kill not only the bad cells, but you're killing good ones too. So there's a high risk of infection if we took her off the floor. If we actually took her out of her room and just wanted to stroll around on the pediatric floor, she usually had to wear a mask.
Now, were you all allowed to stay with her, like overnight and stuff? Or
absolutely. The thing was, when Emily was diagnosed, we had a 5-month-old. So we have a 5-month-old and a 2-year-old, and one has leukemia, and the other one is a 5-month-old, for any parents who know what a 5-month-old brings. So the way it worked was I wound up being transferred to the base in Mississippi. And I would stay through the evening and spend the nights in the hospital while my wife stayed during the day, while also trying to take care of a 5-month-old who was also sitting with our 2-year-old that had cancer. So it was, we didn't see much of each other. We saw each other in passing. I literally, on the average, slept there 6-7 days a week. And Bonnie would come in, we would pass each other, and sometimes the nurses, if everything was in a decent situation where there weren't any real complications going on with the chemo, the nurses and the floor staff made us either A, go out on a date, or B, at least go home for one night.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that they would call us if anything. So either on a Saturday or a Sunday.
Do you think caring for Emily brought you and your wife closer, or did it create distance?
Oh, I thought it brought us closer. I mean, for me, I approach things, we approach things differently, I would think. I approach this when you hear cancer or leukemia, you approach it, for me, I approached it like an athletic contest or even being in the military, kind of like a war.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do whatever it takes to win this. We're going to beat this. We're going to win the war.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to just move on. This, you know, we're told that we have a high chance of getting her in remission. Well, the only thing that I was thinking of was remission.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more. What do we need to do to get into remission? And I had blinders on where Bonnie was a more softer touch than I was, but I thought it brought us closer together. We celebrated, you know, the days where the numbers, you know, her blood numbers were high. It brought us closer together for
yeah.
sure.
Did you guys have help?
The Air Force family was remarkable. They, you know, my boss allowed me to work a very weird shift. I would go in earlier in the morning. I would go in around 5 in the morning so I could be out there by, say, 3 or 4. And, no, from a church standpoint, my mother or father would come down and help us with, say, our other daughter, Lauren, and my in-laws would do the same thing. So we did get a lot of help in that
mm-hmm.
regard.
Can you share how you got through some of those grueling day-to-day aspects of Emily's illness and hospitalization? I mean, was your faith getting you through?
Yes, our faith was getting us through. We've always been a couple that prayed morning and night, not only as a family, but as a couple. To say that I didn't have a knot in my stomach when we were going to find out where we were sitting as far as blood numbers and things of that, I'm one who has the personality that I'm a warrior.
Okay.
I'm a warrior. Where...
Any practical things that you would do to kind of dispel that worry?
Read scripture and pray.
Were you able to share your feelings? I mean, did you have a close friend that you were able to confide in, or was it just Bonnie?
I did. I had two buddies. One that I grew up with in Baltimore. I'm originally from Baltimore. And also one of my Air Force friends that I left in Alabama. And their phone calls, even though they were maybe sometimes 20, 30 minutes, but boy, 20, 30 minutes was a gift, a blessing, just because besides talking about what was going on and having their reassurance, also just talking about things of the world to take my mind off of everything that we were pretty much living 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't sleep many long hours. I worry a lot. And I think anyone who has a child that's undergoing that has been through the grinder of not that much sleep, a whole lot of worry, and a whole lot of praying.
Yeah.
You reach a point that you basically need to learn to start trusting in the Lord. There was a scripture that I always tried to remind myself of during that time. It's in Psalms, and it's chapter 139, verse 12, and basically states, Jesus offers himself as the light in our darkness. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I kind of felt that that was my darkness. I realized that, you know, God doesn't offer a formula or any set of instructions or any expectations for our grief process. He just offers himself. And
that's powerful, Matt. And the other thing I think that's really awesome is that you were able to talk and share your feelings. A lot of men just withdraw, clam up. You know, men tend to be instrumental grievers. They busy themselves, things like that. And so I think it's key that you were able to do those things, and that probably really helped you in the long run.
It did. There were times that I did. I do have to say that there were times where I did try to lose myself in my work or mm-hmm. even in service to others. You know, there were times where, at least after Emily's passing, that I tried to lose myself in work or serving others.
Mm-hmm.
Grief can actually help us. It took me a while, but, you know, grief can actually help us. It allows us to accept God's comfort, helps us better understand the differences in the way we and our other family members grieve. I grieve differently than Bonnie. I grieve differently than my parents or my mother and or my father. My father is a very strong-willed man, where my mother, I get a lot of the sensitivity from my mother.
Right.
And
but I think it's important that we realize that as we go through the grieving process, that everybody's grief is going to be different. That really helps, especially in a marriage, because that can cause conflict in terms of how, you know, a husband and wife grieve and the beliefs that they have about one another in terms of the grief.
Absolutely. I mean, not many marriages make it.
Right, with the loss of a child.
Or even a severe diagnosis.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard of families that, you know, husbands and wives split because they can't deal with the diagnosis of having a special needs child.
Right.
Sad.
In the book, you said that after Emily died, you held God at a measurable distance. Can you talk about that time in your life?
Oh, absolutely. That's when I became angry.
Okay.
Once the funeral was over, I was mad. I cut off all communication.
What were you believing about God? He's unjust?
Yes. How could he allow a special needs child, a little girl, 2 years old, who doesn't know anything about the pain or the treatments that she's undergoing? I mean, to have a special needs, number one, to have a special needs child, and then to have a special needs child have cancer, and not only undergo one round of chemo, then we did go into remission once. But when she relapsed, have this child again, now we're going to intensify the chemo and prepare her for a bone marrow transplant, which we did have a match. Our five-month-old at that time was now almost a year old, was an exact match. So now we're trying to get ready for a bone marrow transplant. So now what do we have to do? We have to intensify the chemo 40%+.
And then you have to subject your other child to that? That must have been really hard just in terms of knowing what Emily's prognosis would be. Did they give you one? I mean, like, this is a sure thing, or was it?
No. We didn't even do the bone marrow transplant because we were intensifying the chemo to prepare her.
Okay.
And then an infection set in around her catheter site. And from there, it kind of went downhill.
Mm.
And it was a very tough decision to even consider doing the bone marrow transplant because of what physical pain would be even inflicted upon our five-month-old.
Sure.
But to this day, our daughters, both of our daughters, Lauren, who at that time was a little less than a year, is now 22 years old, and we have another daughter, Kimberly, who is 20. And it's unbelievable how they hold their big sister on such a pedestal.
Wow.
In the book, I mention about a set of rings I bought one Christmas for my wife and my daughters. And to this very day, they wear those rings every day. And it's Emily's birthstone.
So how long did it take you to come to terms with your anger at God?
It took, I would say, about a year after Emily's funeral. After Emily's funeral, I came back and tried to get back to life as normal. And we would come back to Mississippi, and every day while walking across the base, I would bump into people that we had met in the hospital or people that I indirectly worked with, and they said, "Hey, I hadn't seen you in quite some time. How's your daughter doing?"
I relive the whole story.
Relive it each and every day, dozens and dozens of times a day. And it got old. And at that point, I cut off. I stopped praying. I said, "I'm mad at you." Mm-hmm. And I think him bringing these people before me, allowing me to share my pain, was his way of letting me heal. It's amazing how God works.
So that's what started turning things around and moving you toward healing, you think?
Mm-hmm. I had to learn how to accept God's comfort. And sometimes we're not all that accepting of that type of comfort. And
that's a key point, Matt. Absolutely. Coming to that place of acceptance.
Absolutely. And we have to, you speak of acceptance, you know, accepting support from others. You know, I'm a guy. I don't need anything. I'm a strong guy.
Right.
I can move on. I'm invincible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a he-man. I can do it all myself. And that kind of stereotypical type of behavior is not healthy. And I think especially speaking as a husband and a father, we need to open ourselves up and accept help.
How can folks get in touch with you, Matt, or get the book?
I think the best place to find the book is on the MyEmily website. My website is www.my-emily.com. And they can get in touch with me. There's a place on the website where they can contact me. And I also have a personal website, mattpatterson.me.
Great, Matt. Thank you so much for being willing to talk about and share your story. I know it was very difficult even 20-some years later. I just appreciate what you're doing, and blessings to all you put your hands to.
Well, thank you very much, Rudy, and allowing me to share Emily's story with others.
Thank you, Matt. God bless. Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.